It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand.
It's Tuesday, November 25th, 2014, Primetime Sports on your radio and your television. Bob McCowan here, John Shannon right there. Yes. Are you a Stevie Wonder fan? Is that what you were asking about, Stevie Wonder?
Well, usually there's a reason the music gets played.
Not always.
Oh, Stevie Wonder was given the Medal of Freedom yesterday by President Obama.
Well, that's nice.
As was Tom Brokaw.
Well, that's nice, too.
Meryl Streep.
Good for her.
Marlo Thomas.
Really?
Yes. Marlo looked very good, I thought.
Marlo had a little work done?
You think?
Just asking.
Of course, you know who Marlo's married to, right, Bob?
Yes, Phil Donahue.
Correct. Correct.
Was Phil there?
I didn't see Phil.
How's Phil doing?
I don't know.
Well, that kind of ends that conversation then, doesn't it? Right there.
I said I didn't know, and I could make it up, but that's not like me.
Let's see. What's that? Oh, the Raptors won again last night. That was a little tense, though.
Yeah.
It's actually a close one at the end.
When does it start getting difficult for them? I mean, seriously. I mean, they're 12-2. Everybody keeps, they haven't played the hard Western teams yet, and they're playing Eastern Conference basketball. I think they're just darn impressive.
Well, they're certainly that.
And Valanciunas, after giving Valanciunas heck on Friday for being an underachiever.
Played his ass off.
He was very good last night.
Oof.
Very good.
Well, I do what I can. Try and help him out.
Well, maybe he's an avid listener. First-time caller.
I don't know about that. victory last night by 4 points, I think, over Phoenix. Game they led by 15 and frittered it away in the second half, but managed to keep their cool, make some free throws, and win by four. And now with the tied with Memphis with the best record in the National Association.
And unfortunately, what happens for the Raptors is that their great play in the first 14 games has been overshadowed by the implosion in Cleveland. And the world media, the American media, is studying what's wrong with LeBron's team and why did LeBron go back. And it's a difficult for the Raptors to get some attention.
Richard Deitch will join us in a few minutes from Sports Illustrated. Brian Cooper of S&E Sponsorship Group will be in studio. Nick Kyprios, Mark Cohan, the outgoing commissioner of the Canadian Football League, perhaps his last appearance on the show.
No, you'll have him on. You can actually, the great thing is after he leaves, you can have him on as a guest on the round table and he can have opinions. You've done that with others who have passed through those hallowed halls. Glenn Grunwald came on the round table one night. You can have Mark Cohan. Tom Wright, after he was commissioner, came on the round table.
Yes, he did.
So you can have Mark Cohan on the round table. And he still won't say anything, but that's okay. You can have him on the round table.
Well, good. Another guy comes on here and doesn't have anything to say. Are you on Friday?
No, I'm not, Bob.
Oh, God for that.
No, sir.
I don't think he'll be available on Friday, though.
Well, I guess.
Although you never know.
I would assume he'll do one last State of the League address.
Well, of course he will. He's still the commissioner, isn't he?
Yes.
Who's going to be the new commissioner?
I don't know. I saw that a couple of names. I saw your old pal Tom Anselmi's name on the list. Who's?
Why not?
Well, he's a pretty smart guy. And former CFL guy, the guy that went to the NFL, Kenny Darrett, who was with at the CFL when...
I do not know.
Ken Darrett was basically the head of marketing, I believe, in the early 90s when Doug Mitchell was the commissioner. And Ken's with the San Diego Chargers now. And so it's,
what's he doing there? Oh, marketing stuff?
I think he's like in head of all the business aspects of the Chargers right now.
Then.
So there's some quality names out there for sure.
Jonah Carey will join us from Grantland. Talk about the signings yesterday by the Boston Red Sox. And Matt Devlin, the play-by-play voice of the Toronto Raptors.
The 12-2 Toronto Raptors.
12-2. Wow.
Do you think it was inevitable that Sandoval goes to the American League? Just because...
Why do you think that?
Well,
if I
have exactly the same money, National League money versus American League money, and I can, you know, four times a game hit as opposed to worry about fielding, for a guy like Sandoval, doesn't it just make more sense to...
You think he's going to be a DH?
I think the days he's not playing third base, he's going to be DH, yeah.
Well, yes. I mean, I guess that makes sense, but...
But that gives you the bat for 25 or 30 more games, doesn't it? In theory? I don't know. Every time a guy, an outfielder, an infielder signs, you think, well, why not? Why not go to the American League where you can literally extend your career and have better, more statistics?
Yeah, there's that.
You know, I still remember, you know, guys that, I'm not trying to do ancient history, but guys that extended their careers, like Rod Carew, stayed three or four more years because all he could do is hit. So for the Angels, that's all he did. And remember Tony Oliva, that's what Tony Oliva did for the Twins, is just extend his career three or four years simply because he could hit. He couldn't field, he could barely run,
yeah,
but he could hit. So guys like Sandoval, I just think it's inevitable that they go to the American League.
Well, you won't be here for that conversation, but perhaps we'll have it.
Beautiful.
And I'll call you immediately afterwards.
No, Bob, I'll be listening. I'll be listening. Oh, yes. I always listen, Bob.
I mentioned Matt Devlin.
Then I phone in and critique.
Well, who do you call? You don't call me.
No, I call the producer.
Well, he doesn't have anything to do with it.
Are you kidding me? He's the boss.
Well, he gets the
guests. Producers are in charge.
Are you in charge of the show?
Absolutely, he is.
See, he's not sure. what else? Oh, the Bills announced they are going to play at Ralph Wilson Stadium on Sunday against the Cleveland Browns.
Are you going?
No.
Why not?
Why?
Why? It's your favorite team. It's a short drive. Rodgers has a relationship, or used to, with the Bills.
I don't know. I hadn't thought much about it. Got to go all the way to Buffalo.
Mike Pettine going against his old team. It'll be a pretty good matchup. And when you consider how the Browns have become.
You think it'll be a good matchup?
I do. I do. Because, I mean, the Browns, again, what they did on Sunday in Atlanta to me was very impressive.
Supposed to be 8 degrees and raining? Well, that'll be nice.
Hold on. Because you're in Buffalo. Is that 8 degrees their way or 8 degrees our way?
Well, if it's raining, John, and it's 8 degrees Fahrenheit, that's not very likely, is it?
But it's possible.
No, it's not possible.
but if you're talking about going across the border, you automatically have to change to Fahrenheit.
Do you?
Yes.
What's 8, 46?
About that.
About that?
Yeah. 46, 47. Yeah, you know.
In there.
Double it and add 31.
Why 31?
Because 32 is too much.
It's 46.4 degrees.
Oh, 46, 47? Pretty close, Bob.
Well, I said 46.
Well, you were wrong because it's the Price is Right rules and you were under.
How is it the price of rice? What you said.
I know.
How is it that?
Actually, Price is Right rules, you win, Bob. So, because I was over.
The Toronto Maple Leafs will wear a patch as a tribute to Pat Quinn.
Yes, sir.
Two games.
One road game in Pittsburgh tomorrow night, and then one home game against the Washington Capitals. So that's...
When's the last time they did that? Does anybody remember? Last time they wore a patch or a... Be a while ago, huh? I mean, I don't remember them doing it, but I'm guessing they probably did. King Clancy?
I would have thought they would have done one for Steve Stavro, but maybe Steve passed away in the summertime. But that's a good question.
See if you can find that out. See, this is what he does right here.
So he's the crack research department too.
Well, that's fundamentally what they do.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's a nice touch. I think that some people out there might say, well, with what Pat Quinn did for this organization for as long as he did it, why don't they do it for the rest of the season?
Right.
It's
okay with me either way.
Yes. At least they're taking time to pay tribute to him. The Canucks are wearing a helmet sticker for the rest of the season with Pat, with PQ on it. And they have a green Irish shamrock on their jersey coming up.
For the rest of the year?
I don't know about that for the rest of the year, but certainly they're doing a tribute tonight when they play at home against the New Jersey Devils.
Well, who else did he coach? Coach LA and he coached Philadelphia.
Yeah, Philadelphia, LA,
Edmonton 1 year.
Edmonton for 1 year, in addition to the Canucks and the Maple Leafs. He had a huge impact in Philadelphia as well. It's just that it's so long ago that you wonder if it will have anybody will notice. I would suspect in Philadelphia, in the next home game, they'll probably do a moment of silence, but I'm not sure they would do anything to their jerseys. Certainly in Vancouver, I've never seen a non-playing person have an impact on a franchise constantly, than Pat did. We traveled back to Vancouver on numerous occasions when we were with MLSE, and they would put a shot of Pat on the scoreboard, and the standing ovation would occur instantly in Vancouver.
Yeah,
the loyalty and love for Pat Quinn in that market, I have never seen it truly for any non-player in my life.
Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated joins us. Hello, Mr. Deitch. How are you?
How are you guys?
Excellent. The Toronto Raptors now 12-2.
Wow.
Yeah. Are starting to get a little attention. I was flipping around the dial and I went to NBA TV and saw Masai Ujiri on being interviewed. Hmm. And they had a rather lengthy interview with him, like maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Are you getting any kind of feel about the little Toronto Raptors engine?
No cursing from your Raptors GM, I hope, during that interview. I know he's been prone to do that.
We did it once.
The world is crazy, by the way, Bob, because the Islanders are also in first place, correct?
They are, yes.
it's up is down, black is white. No, the Raptors, certainly not in this part of the world, in New York, there's been sort of no buzz on the Raptors. And my sense is it's still a little early.
Well, it is.
For the Raptors to get some kind of, quote-unquote, become sort of a national team. But, you keep this up, we get to the 40 or 50 game mark, and they're putting up those kind of numbers. The league will take notice, and then the networks will try to get them, especially NBA TV, which can get extra games as part of their fan night coverage. And otherwise, you'll see the Raptors more on national television. But heading through Christmas, it's going to be the usual cast of characters. You'll see the Cavs a ton of times. You'll see the Lakers a ton of times. You'll see the Thunder a ton of times now that those two guys are back. That's, the big teams will remain the big teams at the moment.
Truth be told, where you live, Richard, it's the Knicks and everybody else, and the Nets don't even get any love.
Yeah, it's still, even when the Nets, for a stretch, it was last year, basically, and even a little bit before that, have better talent or have a better roster. It's always been a Knicks town. That was even the case when the Nets were in Jersey, and going to the champion, you know, going to the finals, even though they end up losing. The New York is a town very steeped in basketball tradition. The, you know, the ghost of those Knicks teams that won in the 70s, I think, still sort of has a little bit of a shadow over the city. And then on top of that, for, you know, I don't buy into the whole mythology of Madison Square Garden, greatest arena on earth, blah blah blah. But the Garden is in the middle of Manhattan, and that in New York is a, you know, major metropolitan world city, and it does make a difference. And as much as I love Brooklyn, it's different. It's one is in New York and one is in Brooklyn.
Thank you for the geography.
Wait, hold on. Are you telling me you don't like going to the Garden?
I don't dislike going to the Garden. I just don't buy the mythology that a lot of New York sort of PR types will say. You know, the Garden is the world's greatest arena, and all these people play there. No doubt, you know, it's famous, and Elvis Presley played there, and Sinatra played there. But having traveled to a lot of different arenas around the country, there are significantly better arenas just for amenities, for fan comforts. The Garden is a bit of a crowded mess. It's certainly better now with the renovation than it was a couple of years ago. It's also wickedly expensive and a very wealthy crowd. So I'm not trying to knock the Garden.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I'm not praying at the altar of it.
Tell you what, I love. It's one of those places I love going to the Garden.
Do you love the Garden itself, or do you just love the fact that it's in New York and you're at the Garden?
No, I'll tell you what, I think the fans there are passionate. Hockey fans, basketball fans. I think there is something. There's an aura about the place. The fact that it's on the fifth floor of a building, and there is something magical about Madison Square Garden for me. I love going there.
That's interesting. I mean, there's no doubt that there is no doubt that the fans are knowledgeable. I think it's a very, especially Ranger fans, I think it's a very passionate crowd. But you know, again, just, you know, I lived in Michigan for a year, and I went to Joe Louis, and, you know, from just assignments at Sports Illustrated, I've been around the country and in different arenas, and, you know, it's going to come off like I'm knocking the Garden, but it always feels to me, or it always felt to me, and it's a little better now, but it felt to me like an old arena. Now, the renovation makes it feels more modern and new, but that would be my sort of long-time complaint, is that it didn't feel like 2014.
Johnny Manziel's in a little bit of trouble here, but we don't know exactly how much. So there's a report that one of his posse drilled some guy, and there's a second report that says it was Johnny Manziel who drilled some guy. What do you know?
I don't know anything. I know what I read, and, you know, until I sort of see more concrete reporting, I wouldn't even begin to guess. There is always that old adage about, you know, bad thing. What is it? Bad things happen after midnight. Bad things happen after 1 a.m. I do think Manziel, given his fame, is absolutely a bit of a target. Not knowing anything about what happened, I do think there will be people trying to make a run at him. At the same time, given the guy's history, I think the guy is someone who likes to party. I think he likes to go out. You know, I don't think it's legit to expect Manziel to be in his room studying the playbook on a Wednesday or Tuesday night at 1 a.m. So I don't know. Thinking about the guy's year, it's been a really weird year for him. I think he would have thought at some point during the season he would have come in and gotten some starts. But Brian Hoyer and that team, I think, has exceeded expectations. Josh Gordon's now back, so the team has a significant offensive weapon. So, in theory, they should be better in the next couple of weeks. And then, you know, the Browns have a decision. I mean, let's say Hoyer leads them to a playoff game. Let's say they win a playoff game. I mean, you at the beginning of the year sold Johnny Manziel as the future of your franchise. Now you have a guy who led you to the playoffs, who I think is a free agent. So they got big decisions ahead of him coming up, it looks like.
What would you do?
I, from the beginning, I'm not a Manziel believer in terms of long-term success. That's not to say I don't think he was a talented college quarterback. I think he was. But I've never been a believer in the improvisational quarterbacks in college. I think they're prone to get hit too much. Manziel, to me, at least even size-wise, has got some issues. He's certainly got a good arm, but so many of the plays that he made at Texas A&M were broken plays, you know, plays not sort of traditional drop-back throws, but sort of plays using his own athleticism. The problem, I think, for a guy like Manziel is the league is athletic. You know, it's one thing to sort of blow up some Big 12 team that you can roll, you know, for 400 yards. It's another thing to do that in the NFL. So I'm not a believer in him long term, but the thing is the Browns draft him in the first round, and you can't give up, generally speaking, on a quarterback who you draft in the first round without seeing what he has. So my guess is that if I had to guess, I would guess that the Browns may try to deal Hoyer and try to get something, but that could come back to haunt them. I don't know. This is a tough one for the Browns in the same way it's very interesting to me what the Redskins will do with RG3. They basically traded so many picks for him, mm-hmm. and now they're at the thought process of maybe getting rid of him, but you're going to get rid of him for what? You don't have another option. So it's
right.
It's pretty interesting when it comes to the quarterbacks in the league.
One of those two guys has got to end up with the Jets, because the Jets are just an accident waiting to happen, and Manziel or RG3 will end up being another accident.
Although, you know, from everything I hear here is that, they would really like to get Mariota from Oregon. But sure. Here's the thing. Living here, this is a tough place to be a quarterback. And maybe you guys would tell me it's the same thing for everywhere. But, like, the quarterbacks do not get an opportunity with the Jets to develop as young quarterbacks. And, you know, usually the fan base, if they start going the wrong way fast, they really turn on them. So, you know, you always wonder, even if it's a high – you know, top 10 kind of pick, yeah. Will they be given the time to and the growing pains to become a good quarterback? I mean, you know, Mark Sanchez was the darling of the city for a little bit. He had basically a bad one-year stretch, and then he was done.
Well, heck, the guy of the other team's won two Super Bowls, and they're turning on him. I mean, they're turning on Eli. I mean,
and, you know, Eli – but the Giants are a very fundamentally different franchise than the Jets. They're a – long-term franchise. You know, look at how long Coughlin's been there. George Young, the GM, was there forever. That's a stable franchise that allows its players to, I think, grow into positions. But you're right. It's amazing to me now. Eli Manning has been as successful a quarterback as we've seen in the city in a long, long time. And he's had a couple down years, and now the fans have sort of forgotten what he has done for that franchise. But maybe that's just the nature of the quarterback position. It's you know, unless you're Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, inevitably you're going to lose your job.
I'm told the Bills are trying to get the game with Cleveland moved to Detroit this weekend. After
play every game in Detroit?
Yeah, they want to play in Detroit now.
I was psyched, though, that they won. Because, I mean, even though I don't think they're really a playoff team, I think it's good for the Buffalo fans because it makes the season still sort of relevant as we head forward. Whatever the game was that they lost the week before – had they been like 7-4 now, I think it feels like a different year. But
Miami beat them the week before.
Miami, that was the game, right? Yeah, it's going to be tough for them to make the playoffs. But there's another example. I mean, I realize it's a ridiculous statement to say, but the Buffalo Bills are a top 15 quarterback away from being a good team.
Yeah.
But
hey,
but it's not, you know, it's not Orton and it's not Manuel.
Yeah. Hey, Richard, I was following your Twitter feed today, and for everybody who needs to know, Richard Deitch's Twitter feed is one of the most informative, intelligent sports Twitter feeds out there. I saw you agree with someone who talked how important it was to follow athletes that have pertinent social opinions on pertinent social issues today. Can you expound on that, how important that is, in your opinion, to be able to talk intelligently with athletes about non-sports issues like Ferguson,
yeah.
Missouri?
Yeah. Yeah, look, you know, it's Jim Trotter actually tweeted that out. I retweeted him. He covers NFL for ESPN. He was at SI for a long time. And I think what you've seen when it comes to the Ferguson grand jury findings, Trayvon Martin, you've seen a lot of intelligent athletes using their social media feeds to, I don't even want to say make a stand, but to at least offer interesting comment or comments with thought. The NBA guys seem to be exceptionally good at this. LeBron James, in my opinion, has become phenomenal in just offering some kind of thought about, you know, events that go way beyond basketball. He was pretty poignant when it came to Trayvon Martin. He just issued, I think it was on his Facebook, like a long statement about Michael Brown. We've seen Kobe Bryant do it. There were a lot of athletes last night who were part of the conversation. I find Chris Cluey to be a very interesting guy. I'm sure there would be others who say he's just, you know, the former Vikings punter. He's nothing more than an activist or an agitator, but I find him to be pretty interesting. So I appreciate it. You know, I understand why athletes would want to stay vanilla. It's very safe. And if you're an agent, you probably would tell people to use the Jeter model and just be like Jeter. But it's interesting to me. I really respect an athlete who, because I know there are athletes out there who care about things more than just sports, and they're interested in politics and culture and art. And I think it's really interesting when we hear from them on that. And if you lose a couple of people in your fan base, so be it, because I think you come off far more human. So that's sort of where I was going for. I was really thinking of LeBron more than anybody else, in that he's the most famous athlete in America, and yet he's willing to step up and talk about social issues.
Hear, hear. Richard, good of you to join us. Thanks, pal.
Thanks. Appreciate
talk to you
it,
soon.
Guys.
Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated. When we come back, Brian Cooper will join us. The Toronto Maple Leafs are the most valuable NHL franchise for the 9th consecutive year. This is Primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
Now, Primetime is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Trying to talk without moving our lips, Bob.
Why don't you do the
coach?
No. Do the coach thing.
We could do the coach thing. Yeah. That's right.
What do you got? You got a letter?
No, I actually did some pre-work, Bob.
What? No, you did not.
Come on. Somebody did it for you.
You did not.
No, it's actually about something else.
So you bring it out to make it look like it's work. What a Lugan. That's unbelievable.
That's how deals get done.
Pretending to have notes.
Sorry.
2012, the Toronto Maple Leafs wore a Matt Sundin patch. Is that because he went to the...
No, there's Matt Sundin night.
Oh.
See, they did special patches for events.
Oh, they honored his number.
Yeah.
Right.
2009, Ace Bailey, Doug Gilmore. Mm-hmm. 2008, Wendell Clark.
Yeah.
2001, 75th anniversary. 2000, All-Star Game. 94, Turk Broda, Johnny Bauer. 93, Teeter Kennedy. 90, Harold Ballard. They wore a Harold Ballard patch?
When didn't they wear a patch, it sounds like?
Well, no, but the irony is they, with all the great Leafs that have passed, they did not
wear
a patch for a... Or someone who passed away.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the last one would, based on this list, would have been Harold,
mm-hmm.
who passed away in 1990.
So there's the list. This is Brian Cooper, by the way, from S&E Sponsorship Group.
Hello, Robert.
He already said hello. Why don't you just read that? Just read what's in front of you.
No.
Let me see it.
No. Oh.
Wrong with
you. Put it away.
Yeah.
The Toronto Maple Leafs are the most valuable NHL franchise for the 9th straight year.
Shocking. Mm-hmm. Shocking.
Well, not so shocking, obviously. They continue to roll with in spite of the fact that the wins haven't been there.
No, it's because of all their playoff performance.
It's purely based on the market's love for everything Leaf. Whether it's merchandise or the broadcast or their tickets or the $14 beer, whatever, they're
is
able
beer
to capitalize
$14?
On it. Yeah, I think so.
You get a lot of beer for that,
though. Yeah, you get it. It's a bit of a trough.
Well, you better for $14.
Why would you have to get a lot?
I would hope that's a 16-ounce beer for $14.
I can't recall.
People buy it for you?
I'm not a beer
guy. You're not much of a beer guy.
I'm not. But anyway, I think a lot of it has to do with any of those top teams is their midweek broadcast deal is the highest in the country and in the league.
Now, while every team that talks about the Forbes, as you well know, everybody talks about the Forbes list and says, I don't know where they get their numbers, it can't be true, blah, blah, blah. But the happiest guy has to be Jeffrey Molson, whose Montreal Canadiens are one of the three teams valued at over $1 billion.
Right.
And when you
consider Jeff, what he purchased.
He paid $585.
Yeah, and that's only 4 years ago, am I correct?
That's pretty good return on your investment.
Yeah, and he's built his Evenco business even bigger.
Bigger than what George had?
As big. Oh, much bigger than what George has. George did a great job on it, but that Evenco business is a machine. There isn't an event or a festival in Quebec that Evenco doesn't run. Hmm. And so they become big promoters. But, you know, those valuations, while everyone poo-poos them, they're pretty on, I think. But the only one I would question is L.A. If the Clippers went for $2 billion. And the Kings have won. I know. It's not a mature hockey market. I get it.
No. But, I mean, that was a over-the-top billionaire.
I agree.
Saying, I'll do anything to get this team.
Right.
And Steve Ballmer,
but you know what?
I'll give you $2 billion.
I think more and more, and you're seeing more and more people coming out of the financial world and the finance business and purchasing teams because they see the capital appreciation that is happening quickly over the years. So it's not just these sport fans that it used to be in the past.
But with your background, and you know this, I mean, we talk about the Canadians own their own arena.
Right.
Maple Leafs own their own arena.
Right.
Rangers, the other billion-dollar team, own their own arena. Clippers don't own their own
arena. They don't own their own arena.
So that's why that's such an anomaly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Vagabonds.
Well,
they're just putting money in Philip Anschutz's pocket.
Yeah, but you're right that the best way to get the greatest value is own your own arena. In some cases, own your own network.
Yeah.
And the YES Network. And then do your own F&B.
And even better, have the city build your arena for you.
Well, and that's even better, but that's only in America.
Yeah, I know.
What do you think Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment's worth?
I think it's a $2 billion or close to a $2 billion number.
What do you think it's worth?
2.5. Oh,
what'd you say?
2.5.
2.5.
It was $2 billion. I left in 2006, and Richard's goal then, your old boss too, was to be a $2 billion business. And then with everything else they've done, when you consider the condo development that they partnered with and that cash cow, cash cow they have around the corner.
I agree. So I'm only off a half a billion.
We can buy the Milwaukee Bucks for
I mean, first of all, you got to find someone that's willing to pay that. Secondly, they're going to break it apart into pieces and, drive the price down. They're going to say, you haven't won since 67.
Oh, you mean a buyer?
Yeah, a buyer.
They're not, they don't care about team performance. A new buyer wouldn't care about team performance, Brian. All you have to do is look at the books.
Right. It'll come down to the multiple, right, of the EBITDA that they make. And the multiples, because the economy is, in the last 5 years, the economy has gotten much better. The NHL business has gotten much better on all fronts, from merchandise, sponsorship, broadcast. And so the multiple, it says, it's ranging, what it used to be in the 2.5 range is now in the 4 range of EBITDA. So it's, significant, almost double. So the valuation goes up. You got to find someone that has that type of jack and wants to do that type of business.
Well, sure.
I'm sorry about
that. No, it's quite all right. The Toronto Maple Leafs are trying to expand their brand into China. The Leafs have identified China as the market most able to boost brand equity and merchandise sales. Really?
You know what? I buy that if you're a league. And Adam Silver has done an unbelievable job with NBA basketball in China. And there have been other sports that have gone into other countries where it's not traditional or endemic to the sport. For a brand, Yankees, yes. Dallas Cowboys, potentially. Man U, yes. But those are brands that have a winning tradition. I think they, you know, are trying to expand their sponsorship pool because there's a large Asian Chinese population in this market, and they're going over to get companies there mm-hmm. to advertise yeah. and sponsor the Raptors, the Leafs.
The interesting thing is that first of all, those rights are really controlled by the National Hockey League. International rights yes. are controlled by the yes, NHL. They are. They're not controlled by the Maple Leafs. The second thing is that Charles Wong spent millions of dollars trying to get an imprint of his hockey team, the New York Islanders.
And got nowhere.
And gave up.
Yeah.
And gave up for many reasons. I mean, China as a hockey team, a hockey power, is in the C division of the IIHF. And there just was not an appetite. I mean, Wong personally tried to sponsor the women's national team, the Olympic team for China that went to the Olympics in Nagano. Salt Lake, not Nagano, but Salt Lake. There are these people have tried before, and when you talk about interest of sport, you know, there's no Yao Ming of hockey hanging around that will change that.
But I agree with you 100%, John, that they're not going over there to grow the game. They're not going over there to grow their brand in that marketplace.
Just get sponsorship here.
I truly believe it's a one-way street that they're looking for, and I think they've already had some success. I think they have a couple of million, $3 million worth of sponsorship through Chinese-based teams, corporations.
Hmm. So just looking to expand that.
Just looking to expand. I mean, yeah. You look at the market, and you can see what the economy over there, and there's a lot of money. So they're smart to do so. But they're not the only ones doing that. There are a lot of other North American-based teams that are doing that.
You mentioned you're not going to the Grey Cup game this year.
I am not. It's the first time in a long time, actually.
How do your clients feel about that?
How do my clients feel about that? They understand that my daughter's pregnant and it's a Thanksgiving. And
it's a thing.
It's a family thing.
Mark Cohan will join us later on the program, the commissioner of the Canadian Football League. This will be his last Grey Cup game. What's he going to do?
Hand over the cup to Hamilton?
Yeah, well.
Oh.
It's a shout out to my friends at the Ticats.
Your friend at the Ticats was on yesterday.
Scott was?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Nice. It's the end of his tenure. And
what's he going to do?
I don't know what he's going to do. Look, I think in the time that he was there, he's accomplished a fair amount. He made that brand stronger than it had been in a while. There are a ton of new builds on the stadium side. Expanded back into Ottawa. He was able to get the sponsors to get behind This Is Our League and use that common tag through a lot of the campaigns. He got a new collective bargaining agreement. The list was pretty good. I still think there's a lot of work to do.
There'll always be a lot of work to do.
There will always be. And then the solve on it is going to be, I have some ideas about what the solve would be. I don't think they'd be too popular, though.
Well, go ahead. What do you think?
Well, look, I think Toronto's always going to be a problem. And some of the bigger markets are problems. I've had this discussion with you before. I think a tighter strategic alignment with the NFL.
The NFL's been good to them, Brian.
Well, without a doubt, but is required. I think, the NFL, when you look at the NBA with their D-League, when you look at all of the sports, have a developmental league in some way. The NFL would say it's the NCAA, but with the rise of the rights of the athlete in the NCAA these days, that may not be there forever. From coaches, look at Trestman in Chicago, to officials, to the players, I think this is the perfect D-League. And while the game and I love three-down football, I think if there was an alignment of the games, we would have the healthiest CFL we'd have ever had.
So you go to four down football. You go to American football.
That, you know what? Again, it's not a popular thought.
We lost you there.
I know. It's not so a popular. Well, John.
47-40, we lost you. We lost you. You were making a lot of sense.
I know. And this is a dual citizen that I got. Look, I have a great cup ring. I love it. I'm talking about for the long term future and the strength of the brand and the product.
All you have to do is look at the television numbers to know that this league has a great shelf life. It has a good, vibrant core fan group everywhere but John, 416.
Well, you know, wait a second. It's not everywhere but 416.
There
are some other struggling clubs that struggle year to year. And you know what?
Give me an example.
I think Hamilton does a great job, but at the same time, I think they have to work really hard to do that.
Ottawa
is going to be the same way.
One at a time, please.
Ottawa is going to be the same way that they're going to have to struggle. They're going to have to work really hard to break even. You know, the community-held clubs, you know, that is their badge of honor. Saskatchewan, Winnipeg, this is their citizenry. That's the label that they get. But, you know, and look, as I said, it's not a popular thing. I know the numbers because I've been around it when I was involved. And it's not like there's a ton of Jack going around.
Oh, no. I never said anybody was going to get rich with the CFL.
But it's almost like survival every year, and that's not the way it should be run. It's got a great history.
Well, I think there's a place for what there may be a need for at certain times is some gate equalization, better gate equalization between the clubs. And revenue sharing between the clubs, and we know that's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen.
That's going to be the biggest issue. The other problem, and I don't mind saying it, the other problem is you got to find a way to get David Brayley not to own two teams and maybe not to own any teams.
But you know what? I think that's part of the growth. I know, but that's part of the problem of the brand in those marketplaces, that they have one owner with two teams with one owner. He came in and saved it. And, you know, praise him for what he did.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's not healthy for the league. And by the way, you know, the fact that, you know, an 8-team league is not healthy either.
Nine-team
league.
I think he should be praised for everything he's done for football.
Yes.
But now it's time.
I agree.
Local ownership in Vancouver and local ownership here would be important. And I do think once they
Let me ask you: you think Bob Young's made a ton of profit?
I know.
Do you think?
I know he has.
David's made a profit even at take away the Grey Cups.
Can't do that. You can't take away the Grey Cups because that's all part and parcel of I can lose $2 million this year, $2 million this year, $2 million this year, and I'll make $9 million this year. And that's how they've done it.
I agree. That's how they've done it, but that's not the way it should be done.
Well,
they should be an operating profit, you know, and especially for a league that's been around for so long. And look, I love CFL football. I love three down
football. You want us to go four downs?
I'm talking about survival of the league, and I'm talking about a great entertaining brand.
It's not going to go that way.
Look, I said it wasn't popular. You wanted to hear it. I just threw it out there.
47-40, you lost me at 47-40. You lost me. I was liking what
Bobby,
you were
saying. Have anything to say on that?
No, but just 3 minutes. You lost him four minutes ago. And you never shut up.
Yeah, right.
I know, because somebody has to protect the CFL. Brian doesn't want
to. Oh, wait a second. Now that's wrong, John. This is the first time in like 20 years I'm missing a Grey Cup game.
And what happened? You know?
And what happened, yeah.
Now you're bailing out
I said it was more strategic alliance. I didn't say it had to go to four downs. You said it had to go to four downs.
No!
Both of you, get out of here. I had enough of both of you. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Bobby.
Thank you, Les Shannon.
My pleasure, Bob.
Nick Kyprios and Mark Cohan, the aforementioned commissioner of the Canadian Football League. Yep, still is. Will join us next hour. Then Jonah Carey of Grantland and Matt Devlin, the voice of the Raptors, coming up. This is Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.